Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What do you mean?
11.
Friends don't lie.
Stop it! You're freaking her out!
She's freaking me out!
The upside down.
Do you understand what he's talking about?
No.
I found the chocolate bunny!
Oh God, please tell me it's not the kid.
I need you to hide!
Warnings are for caution and contemplation.
Holy shit.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
Yeah, I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, the unofficial Stranger Things podcast. We're back. This is Stranger Things 4. It's all happening.
It's all happening.
3 years has led to this moment right now.
We were such sweet summer children. We thought it would take but a year. And we're like, there's no way there's going to be an apocalyptic event betwixt this that would push this even farther away. And yet... we were wrong in that prediction, as in many others.
So wrong.
Anyway,
back then,
let's focus on the present, on the now. So if you're new to the show, thank you for joining us. We've got a shtick here at Streaming Things. What we do on this shtick that I'm talking about.
We do the shtick.
The shtick.
Hey, man, how you work that shtick? Show me.
I'll show you. Mm. We watch the show together as a team, like the Hawkins Tigers. And then we hop straight onto the microphones and we discuss the show immediately after. So we live on the East Coast of America. So right now what that means is it's 4:30 a.m. Our brains are mush. I'm befuddled. I got to tell you.
Oh, you befuddled, bro.
I'm completely befuddled. We did a whole Stranger Things D&D themed event at midnight. Mm-hmm. And then we watched some Kenobes. And then we watched Stranger Things, and now I'm befuddled. I'm overwhelmed.
I'm bamboozled.
So myself. If I say strange things,
I'm all right.
If you're new to the show, just chalk it up to that. If you've been listening for years, you know it's nothing new, and I'm always like this.
Par for the course.
But let me walk you through how this is going to work if you're new. We're going to talk about some overall thoughts on the episode, and then what we're going to do is we're going to do a play-by-play recap, go over every single little thing that we noticed. And then we do a segment we like to call the chocolate pudding, which is an allusion to season one, and we discuss our three favorite moments from the episode. And then we look for Eggos, Easter Eggos, all the little 1980s allusions that we found in the episode. Each of us have tried to take notes and try to find different little special things. And then we'll go watch episode two. That's the way we do it.
Baby.
Did I miss anything?
Oh, we got our new segment. We got Mad Libs coming up that will sandwich the show.
That's true. There's a new Mad Libs sandwich, if you will. Mm-hmm. Steve's got a Stranger Things themed Mad Lib notebook. So we're going to fill in those little blanks cued by Steve at the beginning of the show. At the end of the episode, he'll read it out and see what kind of monstrosity we've created. But right before that, I'm going to get a little business news, okay?
Business.
We do have a Patreon. So you can go to patreon.com/streamingthings. on that Patreon. If you subscribe at a $5 tier or above, you get extra content. And we know how much you guys love the content.
For the content.
So like I mentioned, we've been watching Kenobi as well. So we'll do some breakdowns and recaps of that show. But that'll only be on the Patreon for the next few weeks.
And for you listeners who are into Stranger Things, we just, like Chris mentioned a little bit earlier, we just recorded our Stranger Things trivia that will be exclusive to our Patreon page. It's awesome. It's centered around, it's a D&D style trivia game. If you're like, D&D and trivia, Steve, those are completely different things. That doesn't make any sense. Well, tune in, go on to the Patreon, become a Patreon subscriber, listen to that episode, and find out exactly how we made it work.
Absolutely. It was actually a doozy. Steve spent weeks working on that, and it was really, really fun.
It was so fun. It was so good.
I'm not just trying to sell you on the Patreon. I mean, that was a blast. It's really interesting and entertaining. It's a whole D&D campaign mixed with trivia. It was a blast. So check that out if you can. If you can't afford the Patreon, not a big deal. It's hard times. There's inflation. Gas is crazy. It's a weird world. We understand all that. Not a big deal. You can support the show for free by just rating and reviewing this show wherever you're listening right now. Could be Stitcher, could be Google Play, could be Apple Podcasts, could be Spotify, could be some shit I don't know about because I'm not hip to all the coolest, newest shit. You could be listening on some kind of, I don't know, virtual reality AirPod set. I don't know.
A ham radio.
I don't know. Somehow all the way from Australia. The AV Club. I'm not as good as
this
Dustin.
This is Mike Wheeler.
There you go.
Do your toilets go spinning the wrong way?
I think
Do
so.
Do you eat kangaroos for breakfast?
Oh, yeah, that's what he said.
I think that's a fair question for that kid to ask. So that's what's going on. Steve, just break the ice there, buddy. Let's do the Mad Libs.
All right. The Mad Libs today is titled, Where's Will?
Where's Will?
Are you guys ready to give me the words?
Let's do it. I'll start. Andy, you go number two.
Person in the room.
Fuck, Steve.
Excuse you. Adjective.
Crispy.
Crispy. Noun.
Zebra.
Interesting noun. Adjective.
Let's go with
caring.
Unusual.
Okay.
Unusual. That is an unusual adjective. Last name.
Carmichael.
Right.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Verb.
Flip.
Adjective. Or I'm sorry. Plural noun.
Cans.
Look at these cans.
Adjective.
Am I only getting adjectives? Let's see here. Is quintessential an adjective?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Quintessential.
Spell that, Steven.
Spell
quintessential.
My chicken scratch. Animal plural.
Peacocks.
Love it.
Is it adjective?
Verb. No.
Oh, no, I had flip. Okay, so I had a verb once already. Cook.
Noun.
Lingerie.
Cook some lingerie.
You guys are making me spell words I don't know how to spell. A place.
Saudi Arabia.
Okay. Noun.
Tower.
Another noun.
A cellar.
It's like a tower. Storm cellar? Cellar?
Yeah.
Okay.
C-E-L-L-A-R.
Okay. Verb.
Run.
Silly word.
Flibbity gibbets.
Flibbity
gibbets, sir.
Gibbets.
Do not make him repeat it.
I don't. I just want to make sure I got the right word there. Flibbity gibbets.
Yes.
Last but not least, I need a verb.
Seduce.
Seduce. Oh, interesting. Wow. I just saw the sentence that seduce is in. Ooh.
Not a good one. Should we change it?
That's a great one.
Okay.
If you don't mind being on a list on the internet.
No, I do.
So if you all want to listen,
very much so. That's a problem for me.
If you all want to listen to the story, Where's Will, that the two of these jabronis just put together, tune in to the end of the episode.
That's right. That's going to be the finale of this one.
Boy.
So, where's my boy?
Where? Hop. Hop. Let's kick it off, guys. I cannot believe this is happening. Season 4, episode 1. The Hellfire Club, and Netflix describes it thusly. Elle is bullied at school. Joyce opens a mysterious package. A scrappy player shakes up D&D night. Warning, contains graphic violence involving children.
Oh, Jesus. They put that in the description?
They did. They did indeed.
Then, wow.
Unfortunately, that is necessary due to the times that we are in here in America. So, that aside, what are your overall thoughts? We'll start with Andy. How did it feel coming back to Stranger Things, even though we just left it because we just rewatched all three seasons like last week. But again, it's new.
Yeah, to jump into some new Stranger Things, the newer things.
New Strange.
Dude, ew. It was awesome. It's darker than it's ever been. And they're leaning hard into horror influence, and I'm absolutely here for it. It was as if they didn't miss a beat. Like every character was behaving exactly as I probably would have expected them to, being freshmen now in high school. It seemed like they were able to just absolutely not just pick up with where they left off, but like carry the characters who I was afraid were in the process of aging out of their roles. It felt like they were able to carry them directly to where, now that I've seen it, it's obvious that it should have gone. And it's wonderful to jump back in. And everything about this episode lived up to what I hoped it would have been. It was fucking dope.
Steve?
I would just like to mirror exactly what Annie said. I mean, it really was like putting on, you know how sometimes, you know how you have a favorite pair of pants? Mm-hmm. Everyone has a favorite pair of pants. You put them on, they feel good, you look good in them, they're just comforting to have on. That was the show. It was like waking up and putting on your favorite pair of pants.
You're saying Stranger Things is caked up.
Oh, so caked up to the gills, my man. It was wonderful because not only did you get to kind of see, you know, all of our favorite characters that we haven't seen in 3 years, where they're at, things have changed. At the end of season three, I mentioned the end of season three really changed up the show. And it's good to see that they're following through on some of that change. They're introducing brand new characters that right out of the gate are hits, at least with me. I don't know about you guys. They're establishing that the show doesn't do what some other lesser shows would do, where all these characters go through traumatic, awful, terrible experiences in the first season. And the next season, they're just like, oh, what? It's just a Wednesday at Hawkins. But yeah, they actually kind of are grappling with the trauma that not only these characters have gone through, but also the town. The town is starting to get wise. The town of Hawkins is getting hip that there's something afoot. Mm-hmm. In this town, in the heartland. Hell in the Heartland, was that
the little blurb at the end of
season three? Yeah. But it was really, really fun. It was great to see the kids again, even though they're growing up. So that's my overall thoughts. Chris, how about yourself?
I'm right there with you guys, I think. Excuse me, I'm just a little bit, I'm befuddled.
You're befuddled, I see it.
Flibbity gibbeted.
That was rapturous for me. I loved it. I'm so excited for where it's going to go. I've been preaching this for years. I think this has every ounce of potential to be the greatest season of Stranger Things so far. People called me crazy. They doubted me. No one.
He's crazy, that Chris.
Yeah. He's talking crazy.
Oh, crazy.
He's
Chris
just
up there.
Spitting that flibbity-jibbity nonsense.
He keeps telling us that Stranger Things is going to be better than last year. I don't believe him. I won't stand by it. I won't allow him to throw that malarkey around.
I say, no, Chris, sir. That's malarkey. You're crazy.
We all know season one's the best and it cannot be beaten. Andy, I will not stand for this, sir.
Andy thinks season three is the best. But other than that,
I do.
I really do think it could be the best. And this is a strong argument for that case right out of the gate. The characters that you're talking about, I think, that are added, I love it. I love them. I think it's great. And like Andy was saying, to take that a little bit further, you know, the characters are all settling right back into where we would expect them to be, you know, but, you know, 6 months later, but, you know, post-trauma, all that stuff. Not only that, but with the editing and, this was just a perfect first episode. They managed to, touch upon, you know, all what, you know, 8, 10, dare I say 11 different arcs. Nice. And stories, and give each one a little bit of light and make it organic. I'm not jumping around too much, but I'm also not like, oh, where's fucking Waldo or whatever.
Mm. Everyone knows that classic Stranger Things character, yeah. Waldo. What's that scamp up to?
So I just was so pleased to see them juggle that. And I want to say, I've been talking about Stranger Things a lot on the internet, you know, as we are wont to do. And a lot of people have said, the only ones that have made a cogent argument that the show should have ended after season one, were saying things like, you know, the first season was this giant mystery and then they solved it. And then seasons two and three were just them trying to hit the same beats. Right. Mm-hmm. Which I think is, I disagree, but I think it's fair criticism. There's definitely less of a mystery to solve in the subsequent seasons. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the fuck is going on at this moment at all. And, I love it. You know, I think it's the biggest mystery. So, of course, in season three, we had the rats and, you know, like, what the fuck is going on with that? You know, there was some other stuff. So I think there were mysteries. But so far, like I said, they've had the years to write on this and work on this. I think I'm excited for how befuddled I will be carrying forward watching the show. But I'm so excited for it. So let's dive into the recap. Let's go. So first off, it opens with a recap. So we get a season three recap and then opens with what they dropped on YouTube, the 8 minutes, if you saw that. Dr. Brenner. He's holy back. Shit. We get introduced to a side of him we've never seen, multiple sides of him that we've never seen.
We saw his feet.
We never saw him shave.
Hello, I'm Dr. Brenner, and this is my crib.
Welcome back, sir.
Hey, thank you. It's very nice to be here. Did you notice I do crossword puzzles in 10 minutes?
Very that's, quick.
Yes.
That's
you know why
like
that
unbelievably
is?
Fast.
You know why?
Why?
Because I'm a smart motherfucker.
Yeah, we got to see that you're a genius. You're very meticulous.
Very.
The way that you clip your plant was just very characterizing.
Just very unnecessary.
Just one clip a day.
Keeps the fungus, so I don't
keeps
know how to plant
a child away. That's what I say.
Oh, okay. That's a good saying for you to have.
I have many.
Yeah. So we got to see Dr. Brenner. He's very meticulous. He's a genius. He does his fucking crossword super fast. And then he goes to work, the Hawkins lab that we know and love. There's a big rainbow painted on the floor. There's a little, you know, X-Men kids running about. Everybody seems kind of happy though. And this is something that we weren't privy to before. Maybe Dr. Brenner was kind. Maybe he actually cared about these children.
He seems to. He's much warmer.
That's the impression I get. And that's so fascinating to me. He seems to genuinely care for 10 specifically. Like mm-hmm. they've got a special connection. I was wondering, I want to ask this before I get too far ahead. If we were talking about it a little bit as we were watching it, because we'd already seen this scene on YouTube. So we were, you know, only half paying attention. But it seems to me, based on the timeline that I'm aware of in my headcanon, that Kali, her sister, number 8, is already gone. This is 1979. Kali is several years older than Jane, a.k.a. 11, when we saw her in season 2. She had certainly seemed to have been out and about in the world for a number of years. And so, and what, 11 gets out in 1983, right? So stands to reason she would have left about 4 years before 11 gets free. I don't know. Is that where we're at with this in our headcanon?
I don't know. It could go either way. Honestly, it could just be a situation where, I mean, I guess she would have had to leave because of
she
what
killed
happens.
Everyone else. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
I really hope that we do get to eventually kind of, you know, creep in and see what Callie's up to, I hope they bring her back this season, at least in some way to provide further context to Eleven's story maybe. But
yeah, I think that's part of what that little opening scene is setting up. So yeah, Eleven, apparently, 11 murders everyone. Yeah, 11
half to death.
Yeah. 11 brutally murders. I don't know. At least, you know, I guess they counted about 10 children, and because she's
plus
11
caretakers.
Minus 8, so about 9 children and they're 5 or 6 orderlies.
Solving a little corner that they had written themselves into, like, oh shit, there's a lot of these kids,
yeah.
And we only have touched on 2 of them. That was such an interesting scene. I think we talked about it in our hype cast, but it's interesting because it kind of recontextualizes Brenner as a character, because as we mentioned, it does show him in a softer light. I mean, they're all holding the kids' hands as they're guiding them between rooms, it seems. That might be like some sort of safety protocol. There's a nice little moment between he and 10 where he you know, he's playing the game like, what did I draw? And 10 closes his eyes and he's like, it's a cow. And Dr. Printer's like, it was supposed to be a dog.
It's a dog, you dumb shit.
I'm failing you. but then it also recontextualizes 11, because now we know that 11 brutally murdered a bunch of little kids. Did she do it on accident? Was she on crazy
you know, MK Ultra drugs? Was she, is she just a young child who was picked on and she has these powers and she can't control them? So she just went, you know, Phoenix Force on everybody. You know, it's a mystery. And this is a good mystery to solve, I think.
It is. It's actually one of several mysteries in this episode. And that's a huge one for her character. But it's not just the way that he interacts with 10. It's like his genuine horror at what 11 does. When he walks in the room after he wakes up, but you know, what have you done? What have you done? We've seen Dr. Brenner watch 11 brutally murder people in season one, and he was almost pleased by that. Like, yes, working, your power's good, right? So it was just a stark contrast with my idea of Dr. Brenner. You know, he seemed like genuinely horrified by what 11 had done. And it makes sense now for the future, because of course 11 is seemingly the only child in the lab, from what we know in 1983. So anyway, it's just, I never expected this to be the prequel tale of that, you know? So it's really interesting. Good mystery. The editing, the sound design during that sequence is phenomenal. Like Andy said, the horror is ramped up
big time.
And I didn't expect to see from Dr. Brenner's POV a horror short film where 11 is the monster. No, you would, I wouldn't have believed you had you told me that
bleeding
in 2017
and shit.
Yeah. That's like, crazy. I don't think we've seen her bleed that much. So obviously that's a level of her power.
We've seen her eyes get all bloodshot and stuff, but never like outright bleeding from her eyes.
And still not even weary looking, really just like huffing and puffing and angry.
Yeah.
She could have kept going, but she don't kill Papa.
No.
Mm-mm. Nobody kills Papa.
She tried to, but she was like, ah, he survived a door. I can't do anything against that.
Well, I don't know that she intentionally, she was just like, 10's in here. I fucking hate that kid. He's always talking to me through the damn eight ball.
He's always like, ooh, eight ball. Right. Shove it up his
first
ass.
First off, stop bringing up eight. She's gone. We miss her.
Yeah.
Oh. No, it's the ball. And then she killed him. So he was trying to explain. Anyway, this is all subtext, guys. You got to keep
sorry,
up.
Sorry, 10. Signs point to yes. That doesn't make sense, 10.
Killed him. That's what he gets. Should use your words. Speaking of words, the present day 1986 opens with 11 writing a letter to Mike, and she is talking in complete sentences for the most part.
It's normal.
Thank God. Yeah. I mean, there's still a tinge of Canadian in there.
Yeah.
But
there's a couple like really clever ways where they kind of in her writing. I think what was the one thing I wrote it down like. I'm double as happy as I have been. It's like, it's just off enough where you're like, oh, yeah. She's learning syntax still. And grammar, but she's still not quite there.
And she enunciates to a strange degree. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, you're not on a podcast right now. You can chill, garble it up. But still, I'm very happy. Like, I've talked at length about how worried I am about how are they going to get out of this hole that they're in about her, the way that she expresses herself. If she's suddenly, you know, super, you know, not affluent, but another A word. Speaking of which, I like words. If she talks real good, all of a sudden, it's going to scare me. You know? So, but they handled that well. And her hair, she looks like Joyce from season one.
She does.
Yeah.
It's like my mom in the old photos I used to see with me as a baby at the amusement park, sitting on the hippo.
Does this imply that Joyce is doing Eleven's hair now? Which I want to see that.
Oh, that's true.
I want to see.
She's
that.
Like, you know what? This looks fire. There's probably going to be another like 80s style makeover for Eleven, I would imagine, somewhere in this season. Mm-hmm. I don't know where. Maybe like when Nancy showed, what the fuck's going on here with the hair? You know, something like that. I don't know. Maybe that's cool. I don't know. I wasn't in the 80s. I was barely there. I was 1 year old.
Eleven updates everybody. She's updating Mike, like Will's painting. He might like somebody. He won't let me see what he's painting. Joyce has a new job as a telemarketer.
We can't gloss over the fact that Andy, well, I guess you agree with Andy 100%, but I'm like 99,000% sure that Will is gay at this point. And that's, I mean, that is almost explicitly revealed in this episode, right?
Yeah, girl, I mean, and like starts poking him with her foot, and he's like, ew. Girl.
You could argue explicitly revealed in season three. I didn't know to take it literally necessarily. I wasn't quite sold on it, but it seems definite here.
To be fair to Will, if I was in class and a girl started poking me with her foot like that, I would have the same exact reaction, like, no.
Jezebel, I'm trying to learn.
It's. I gotta pay attention Helen to social Keller studies.
Yeah, talking about Helen Keller right now. And what are you worried about? Wiener?
I want to know what happened to Helen Keller. Stop.
Steve, you're just a damn good student. I don't know what to tell you.
Seized the degrees.
Let's paint a picture for you, though. I mean, I know you just watched the episode, too, as you're listening to this. However, so Joyce, Will, Jonathan, and Eleven, who's going by Jane in the public eye, because that's a weird name to put on your birth certificate or to put enroll in school as 11, are all in California. And then Max, Nancy, Mike, Lucas, Dustin, they're all still back in Hawkins. We don't know where Hopper is yet, but we find out later we might know where, right? And that's the scene. So it looks like 11's about to go on spring break, and Mike's probably going to visit her. That's what we're seeing. Nancy and Jonathan, we don't know if they're going to meet up. I did want to say something. What was your read on why 11 was lying? Because friends don't lie. Or was she lying, or is she just kind of delusional? Because the letter she's writing to Mike is that she's so happy and she's making all these friends and everything's wonderful. We see in actuality, she has no friends other than Will. Things are going terribly. Mm-hmm. So what was your read on that?
I think it makes sense. You know, what's the alternative? You're doing the 80s version of texting your boyfriend and being like, my life sucks and I want to come home. You know, I mean, like, you're just going to worry them because that's not
trying not to worry Mike.
And
sure.
So I wouldn't take it as a lie.
But
so
she did kind of seem like genuinely hopeful for the day while she was making the little model and stuff, though, or the diorama.
As if like, so this is spring break, so half of the year has gone by at this point, or at least some portion of it.
I don't remember how school time works.
It's like 3/4 of the school year.
Okay. So all to say is like she's well established at the school as the freaky girl that gets picked on, right? So presumably she's been dealing with this the entire time. Unless like they jumped in partway through the school year, I don't know. Like they were treating her almost like the new girl when it was time to go up in front of class and present and stuff. But maybe that was just me projecting onto that scene.
Will seems to have assimilated.
Yeah.
Was my take. And so I think they just don't like her. She does stand out an extra bit. Right. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
I found it interesting that, like you said, in, you know, her name's Jane, but Will's still openly calling her Elle. And I don't know. I thought that was weird. Does anyone ever be like, hey, her name's Jane?
Yeah, there's no L in there, buddy.
What?
It's her middle name. It's her middle name.
Yeah.
Elena. Olena. Ellen. Something. Okay. Anything like
Eleanor.
That. Or just the letter L.
Eleanor was the name they gave her in season one.
Really? Eleanor. Yeah, they finished it.
Eleanor.
Yep. Yeah.
It was when the Dr. Clarks caught him in the school and they were like, she's my Swedish cousin.
Yeah. So Will's bad painting.
Yeah. Bad.
Joyce is in sales, selling encyclopedias.
Yeah,
I had a whole set A to Z of encyclopedias when I was a kid.
I had a set that came with my house that was in
house.
It did. Like the old guy that owned it before me left them here, and they were in the cabinets above my fridge. I just threw them away, but I flipped through first. They were old and wrong, which was fun.
Wrong. This war was about states' rights.
Yeah. Ooh, this is an old book.
This is an old book.
Also, Pluto's a planet.
And Jonathan has a new friend named Argyle. They're hippies. They're smoking the weed. That wacky tobacco.
Smoking the weed.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're from plants that come from the ground, but don't tell Joyce.
Yeah, that was awesome. Well, I saw he was waving the smoke out the window, and I was like, oh, shit, we're going to do some...
He was massively hotboxing that bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. We're going to do some Dazed and Confused here. And that actor, I don't know his name.
Charlie Heaton.
No, the Argyle.
Oh, Argyle. Oh, okay. No, I don't know that guy's name off the top of my head.
He was in that comedy / horror-ish weird movie where the guy gets his dick chopped off and they have to put it on ice and they spend the entire film trying to get it to be reattached. And that's the story of that film.
Oh, my God. I don't think I've seen
it. It's on Netflix. I forget the name of it. But he's...
Teeth?
No. He's hilarious. But anyway, so Jonathan's got a new friend named Argyle. Spring break's coming. They don't like 11, like we touched on. She gets hit with a spitball in the next scene. And then we cut to check in on Susie.
Eduardo Franco is Argyle's.
Eduardo Franco. Okay. We get to check in on Susie. It looks like Dustin And I was confused by this scene. So he's calling Susie. Obviously, he's getting her to hack into Hawkins and change his grade because he got one D minus. And she's very disappointed in him for that because she's a genius. How is she doing this? Forgive me, but was there like internet at this time?
A very crude form of it. DARPANET.
I don't know. I was looking at the IT guy and the other nerd.
I don't know.
So, I mean, I know there was, but yeah, like it was generally wasn't like a message like
boards and stuff
open to the public kind of internet yet, right?
No, so it was a closed system. So it's one of those things where I don't know how this girl in Salt Lake City, Utah, is getting access to the computers of Hawkins, Indiana.
Yeah, I don't understand at all how that there's like she didn't have a fucking modem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a little bit of movie magic, I think. But I do like the scene where she turns around and looks at the...
Oh, so good. Looks at Jesus.
I'm sorry.
Right before she does it, like, oh, yeah, I'll just have to get forgiveness later.
I was curious about this because we always knew that Susie was from Salt Lake City. And I wonder if Susie's Mormon. Is she Mormon?
Yeah.
And then she turns around and sees that Jesus. I'm like, oh, man.
You're going to have spooky Mormon hell dream.
Spooky Mormon hell dream.
And then we get to check in on my favorite duo nowadays. Steve and Robin, and they're driving along in the car. I'm a little confused by where they're at with this too. So is Robin still in high school and Steve's not?
I think so. Yeah.
So Robin's in the band. She's like a senior and Steve's graduated. He's just going with his friend. Right. Mm. So he's going to the pep rally to accompany her. She's got a crush on her fellow band member. And remember from season 3, we found out that she's gay. And so they talk a little bit about the differences in their love lives with that, right? So
yeah, Steve's like, hey, you ask a girl out, and that's the worst thing that can happen.
No big deal. She's like, wrong.
If she paused Fast Times at like 58 minutes, obviously she likes boobies.
Yeah.
That was Steve's proof that he thinks that's 100% verified. Because remember, they work at Family Video. So, hey, Vicky returned that tape, paused at 53 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is, I assume, the Phoebe Cates scene.
It has to be.
So anyway, that was a really funny, endearing moment. Gotta love Robin and Steve. And then we cut to the pep rally itself. I forget the guy's name, but he's like the team captain.
Luke. Chad.
It's 100% Chad, right?
It has to be Chad.
He's a total Chad.
And I wrote grandiose sport ball because this is totally how it is too, from my experiences with it, which are very little to be honest.
But were pep rallies when you guys were in high school, did they have the pep rallies at 7 a.m. first thing in the morning, like here?
No.
Like it was in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Around lunchtime.
And I hardly ever went. Yeah. Like they let us not go. I was in the crew that...
Oh, we had to go.
I was like in the Eddie Munson crew, but we didn't play D&D, but we were all dressed that way. Mm-hmm. And they just didn't want us. They didn't even want us there. Yeah. They let us sit in the lunchroom. So, but anyway. So grandiose sport ball. He's relating it to the events of season 3 where we lost, I think, 20 or 30 members of Hawkins died. Mm-hmm. But he's bringing it all back to why they got to win the game tonight.
You think they died for nothing?
Right.
No, they died so we could win this sports ball game. I also thought it was weird. They're like, here's the basketball team. Now the team captain's going to do a tight set.
A tight set, yeah.
Tight five. No teacher's going to introduce him. He's just going to grab the mic from the principal. All right, nerds, time to talk about shooty hoops.
Shooty hoops, which is originally what it was called. And then we get a little weird look between Lucas and Max. We find out later that Max and Lucas have broken up and that Max has kind of been a loner ever since.
Lucas is on the sports ball team. We get a couple weird looks because
crew cut.
Yeah. Lucas is on the basketball team. Mike and Dustin are there in the crowd trying to show some support, but you can tell they're also kind of like sports, cool.
The Hellfire Club, we should say, is the Dungeons and Dragons club that they're all members of. Even Lucas, they're all still playing that. I just find it strange, and I'm a little disappointed, especially in Mike, because I hate him the most, that they've allowed Max to isolate herself like this after the tragedy. And they all seem to have moved on like, should be all right. And that's disappointing because she lost not only her brother, but her new best friend, 11.
Well, that's a good thing about Lucas is even despite the fact that she broke up with him,
he's trying to help her.
You can see that he's really worried about her and he's trying to help her out.
But he's pretty bad. Now. He's a foot and mouth guy, right?
Very much so.
It's unfortunate he's the only one trying.
Well, yeah. I mean, we also got the little bit where Dustin tried to invite her to play Dungeons and Dragons with him. And
for him, though, he was afraid of Eddie and he wanted to fill that spot.
For sure.
But she was like the 13th one he asked.
For sure. the her reaction gave me the vibe that she has.
They had made many attempts.
That she kind of doesn't want anything to do with them. Like, they're probably reminders of the tragedy. And
sure.
She just, you know, wants to live her life or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. It just sucks.
Yeah, it's tough.
You don't like to see a character that you like be in a bad situation, and it's probably not going to get good anytime soon.
No, it's going to get way worse.
I will say, I think this is the first episode since, you know, probably the first season where Mike Wheeler wasn't a total miserable.
That's true. I actually really liked him. Like, that. Tell me things.
Yeah. That was a really good line.
Mike was being fun for sure. I have to begrudgingly admit that. So anyway, Lucas is on the team. We find out the championship game of for the basketball, whatever the fuck it's called, the balls.
Shooty hoops.
The shooty hoops game is that night.
Balls and laundry baskets.
Same night as the big finale of their D&D campaign for the Hellfire Club. So they got to ask Eddie, the new character we're about to meet here shortly, the king of the Hellfire Club, the dungeon master, if you will, if they can move the D&D event so they can go to Lucas's game. That's going to go swimmingly. Don't worry.
Because Lucas just wants his friends to support him.
He gave an empowered speech about how he doesn't want to be himself anymore. He wants to sell out and act like he's someone else to have friends, which is probably really good for his growth as a person.
He wants to be popular.
And he almost sold Dustin and Lucas, or Dustin and Will. What the fuck is it? Mike. I don't like saying his name.
Will's in California, like, yeah, man.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I'm painting. We cut to Joyce, and she's receiving a strange package with a bunch of stamps on it while she's trying to sell some encyclopedias.
With a very friendly mailman.
Yeah, super friendly. It's like Andy's mailman.
He's like, don't worry, Joyce. They send these college acceptance letters on the weekends. You still got time. Tell Jay Bird he's going to be fine.
Andy's a man.
How's your mother?
Andy's
your
mailman mother? Follows him on Facebook. So yeah. I didn't see it was weird at all.
My mailman's super nice.
I swear to God, he's he does. He's a cool dude. In the inside.
You guys hanging out?
No.
Inside.
You guys doing some Facebook hangs?
We just high five every now and then.
Google Steve. Meets.
Some Google Meets. What's his name? Let's get him on the podcast.
Inside the package is a Russian doll, and because we watched the trailer, we all assume where that was going. Cut back to 11. She's in class about to present her presentation. She follows the fucking Helen Keller girl. What's her name? Amber?
Angela.
I knew it was an A. Oh, I wrote it right above that. Yeah, Angela did a Helen Keller presentation. She's kind of a bully / teacher's pet. Valley girl. It's a sad situation. And then Elle did her presentation because it was on heroes, famous heroes. She chose her dad, Hopper. And I have not hated anyone as much as I hate Angela since Mike.
Dude, hate her. I hate her worse than Mike.
I was having this moment with Elle, you know, even though I know Hopper's fine, it was still like really, you know, I lost my father. Not to get too emotional here on the podcast, but I'm enjoying this moment. And that motherfucker, she's making all these jokes about how you did the project wrong. And I was very upset. That was very hard to watch.
The way she did it, too, was like, Mrs. Whatever, am I to understand that you could choose anyone to be your hero? I thought it was supposed to be, you know.
Yeah, and why is the teacher allowing her to, like, openly bully her like that? Like, it's she's definitely not asking innocent questions.
I know that I already did the project, and so it doesn't apply to me because I literally just presented, but
I didn't know we could be a dumb bitch, teacher. Is that okay? Like, she's being very blatant about it. I was also, and again, I'm very sympathetic, and this will come into play more. I'll just leave it for then.
But, like, this goes back to all the way back to season one. It's such an 80s movie trope.
Sure.
To have the bullies of the high school picking on the main characters to be absolute 110% sociopaths. Like, we had Troy in the first season who were like, hey, losers, heard your friend's missing, possibly dead, but you're all gay. And it's just like, what little fucking monster are you? And then you have this girl in 11's like, my dad's my hero. He saved a bunch of people. You are probably aware that he's dead, I assume, or at least I'm visibly upset that you're mocking him. And then she's just like really digging in, and then she's got her little toadies in the background like, good one, Angela.
Yeah,
you really got her. And he's got like his jean jacket rolled up sleeves.
They are like caricatures. It reminded me a little bit of Callie's crew from The Lost Sister, where it's just like over the top trying. You're writing about like a these characters that you saw in a cartoon once when you were a kid, as opposed to like trying to make them come across as even remotely human. But even still, I'm with Chris on like, it was emotionally impactful and it made me hate the girl, you know,
and kids can be really cruel to one another. That is for sure. And like you said, it's an 80s trope as well. And, it really hit me hard. Like it's supposed to, it's very much what it's designed to do.
Yeah.
Because I have that emotional attachment to Hopper. And I know everything that Eleven's been through, and I know what she could do to these people. If she wasn't, on a normal day, if she wasn't like inhibited from her powers temporarily.
I did like that she was looking to Will, and Will's in the back, like, "Oh, you can do it.
That's what I was going to say. I wanted to plant a flag, but it bothers me a little bit. And like I said, I'm sympathetic because I know he is trying. He's very supportive. He's there for her. Somehow they got in the same classes and stuff. That's great. But he doesn't actually do anything. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't stand up for her. He's just like emotional support. And maybe it's like you got to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. But in the second scene where she's actually physically being bullied and he's just watching, it's very upsetting because it's like,
well, that's also not,
you could run up, you could say, "Hey, leave her alone."
That's not Will though.
Sure.
Like, I don't think Will's the type
that man has survived things that 99% of humans could never imagine.
For sure.
I think he's probably not scared of Angela at this point, even though he's a shyer person.
So I don't know if he's scared of her, but he's not comfortable around human beings. He's not comfortable around people that aren't his core group of friends. Like he only ever interacts with Joyce, Jonathan, his friends. And everyone else he's very like, he's just not comfortable around it.
That's a fair point, though. All the stuff that he survived, he just did by hiding. It's not like he ever confronted anything or did anything heroic.
And the one time he did confront his fears, it messed him the fuck up. Remember when Bob Newby's like, "Turn around and say, go away." Yeah. He turned around and said, "Go away." And he got a whole mouthful of smoke monster
sandstorm stuff. Yeah, that's no good. Mm-mm. Still feeling the Will tingle.
He's afraid that if he goes up there and he like goes up to Angela, he's like, "Go away." She's just gonna start sticking her fingers in his mouth.
Oh, I'm gonna have to get 6 heaters strapped to me. Oh, I hate this. This is the worst.
Jonathan, play the Clash.
One fucking bully though. The diorama, more like diarrhea. Am I right?
He crushed it though. That guy's a genius.
The word was articulate. The A word. Where you're like, you speaking better now.
Thank you for 20 minutes later.
I thought of it, but I was like,
who also has a degree in English.
I'll bring it back.
And is never able to help me. So we cut back to Max. She's not talking. She's just walking around with her Walkman. She sees who we later find out is Chrissy. By the way, Chad, the team captain, the head cheerleader's name is Chrissy, and that's his girlfriend. That comes into play later. But Chrissy comes upset out of the counselor's office, and Max goes in. She's got bad grades. We find out that her mother and her stepdad have split up. Her stepdad, of course, is Billy's father, so I assume he just went off the deep end. They've moved into a crap hole now, and her mom's drinking a lot. Max is getting these headaches. I pause because I don't know if we want to talk about it later. Do you guys think anything about these headaches? Is it just stress, some kind of depression, or is it supernatural?
I do think that is planting the seed for something that's going to get brought up later. I don't have an opinion on it yet, but other than to say I do think that it's hinting at something.
Sure. Okay.
I know in our predictions, we kind of mentioned that, you know, Max could be supernatural, but something happened at the end of the episode. I'm like, ooh, maybe it's not Max that's supernatural. She's just being the victim of something supernatural.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. That has got to be what that's what I'm saying is like, do you think that seed has already planted for Vecna to be messing with Max? So I think what we get is my theory, which is almost certainly true, just based on what I've seen. The fate of Chrissy is just to cue us up for fear when things begin to start happening to Max, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like the fact, it's like Scream, you know, you get the opening victim, the Drew Barrymore, and then you're scared for your Neve Campbell, right? Mm-hmm. So Max is Neve Campbell. Chrissy was Drew Barrymore. You see what I'm saying?
Dude, I'm picking up what you're throwing down.
It's obvious what I'm saying. I'm just making it dramatic. And then it cuts to Lucas, you know, trying to confront Max. We talked about that a little bit later. She's not having it. "Hey, will you come to my game tonight? I know we're broken up. It's all good. I just want you to be okay." She's like, "Yeah, what's up? I'm fine." She goes in the bathroom, very clearly not fine. Takes a couple of Tylenol, turns around, sees a cheerleader vomiting. I thought, first thing I was like, "Oh,
this is high school."
Okay. But no, it's something a little more sinister. And it is Chrissy Cunningham that's in there vomiting.
May I say?
And may you say, sure.
May I say, Hawkins, you know, great job. You have successfully planned and created and made the world's creepiest fucking bathroom.
it's the 80s, man.
Yeah, like as soon as, you know, Max could have been in there washing your hands, saying happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you. But in that bathroom, it would still be creepy as shit.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get a Candyman crossover for sure. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know. Yeah, we didn't know what was going on. We still don't.
We see the feet underneath the door.
Vecna's feet.
It sounds like her mom at first, and then it like does the vocal transformation. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like something out of like Evil Dead. It's really cool. She says, "I'll gut you like the fat pig that you are." I was like, "Let's fucking go." That's some Evil Dead shit.
Yeah,
yeah. There was that passive aggressive, like, "Oh, I made the dress bigger for you," like implying that she does suffer from some sort of, you know,
yeah, it was like a bulimia related thing, right? Yeah. For sure.
Like it, maybe this Vecna character preys off people who are emotionally traumatized by something. So she's emotionally traumatized by her obviously abusive emotionally abusive mother.
Her mother and maybe that eating disorder.
Yeah, maybe that leads to why
maybe her father never stood up for her, which is why in the vision at the end he had his mouth sewn shut.
Mm, yeah.
As to say, he just sits in his chair and just pretends not to notice what the mom's doing to her.
Is Chrissy the girl that Max walked past?
Yeah.
That was also coming out of the counselor. So maybe she's dealing with that.
Conceivably was in the counselor's office trying to talk about what was going on.
Oh, I just put something together. So Max has headaches. Do you think Chrissy also is suffering from something? That's why she's going to Eddie for drugs?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. But I think she's trying to black out visions that she's having that are visceral.
Like, even if weed's not strong enough, you know, she wasn't like, I'm down to party. Let's do ketamine. You know what I mean? It was like something's wrong with me and I want it to go away.
What did they call it? Circle K?
Special K.
Special K. Circle K is the gas station.
I know.
We're talking cereal, Steven.
We'll get
Why
to that.
Why does she need gas?
We'll get to that in a second. We're almost there. Dustin tells Eddie that they're not going to make it. And then we get that whole lunchroom introduction to Eddie Munson and the gang. I adore this character. I have not loved a character this much immediately.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Maybe ever, because even Steve, it took an entire season and then the reveal with the baseball bat at the end to really like him. And then his debut in season 2, when he pulls the bat out of the trunk and you see him with Dustin and them, like just instantly they gave him a little monologue and he's got all the swagger of Billy, but none of the bad stuff. And, you know, he's got the charm of Steve, the swagger of Billy. I'm down with Eddie. How you guys feeling about Eddie?
Big Detroit Rock City vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was awesome.
They even played that song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they literally played it. I was talking about the movie, but yes.
Yeah, no, I know. I think those two things are very much on purpose.
Yeah, yeah, true. No, he was awesome.
Yeah, he was immediately magnetic is the word. Like, as soon as you see him, you understand why he's got this little cult of personality amongst, you know, his little Hellfire Club stooges.
And he's like 20, right? He should have graduated a couple years ago.
Yeah, so he's been held back a couple years, but he's very charismatic. And the way he kind of like jumps on the table and he's like calling out all the other clicks, as it were. Doesn't he like jump off the table and he scares a passing teacher? He's like, sorry.
Yeah.
Is there like a little finger gun?
Yeah.
Just an immediately likable dude. And you can understand why Dustin and Mike kind of like look to this dude. And the other thing I liked about this character, and we'll kind of like touch on it more and more as this episode progresses, but I love how even though you're immediately drawn into him and you like how charismatic he is and he's so funny, there's just a touch of something wrong to where a lot of this episode, I'm like, ooh, is Eddie the bad guy? Mm-hmm. Is he going to be the bad guy of the season?
Really? Ooh. That's the vibe you got?
I got like a very hint of it. Like, ooh, he could be
tiny little hints where he'll like suddenly grab the kids and like you like throw them around, kind of manhandles it. Mm-hmm. He does that several times. Mm-hmm. So he's got like these minor little, I don't know if you call it a microaggression, because literally manhandling somebody's a bit more than that. But I got the tiny hints of, plus he also is a drug dealer, and like that's not necessarily a bad thing, but in the context of an 80s thing, it almost always
is. He's like a weed dealer.
Oh, he's selling ketamine too.
No, he like knows where to get some because his uncle has some and shit, right? Like he was real confused about her asking for harder drugs. And
I was wondering about that too, because he was like, I don't know where it is.
It took him so long to find it. It's not like he frequently sells it or uses it. You know what I mean? He just knew where it was ish.
But they also frame him in ways that are a little, not seedy is not the word, but there's a little something.
I think you guys are being real squares about Eddie.
No. Here's the thing. So you get the little point where he like, oh, is he a little bit of a bully? Is he kind of a megalomaniac in his club in the first scene? We have a scene later on where he meets up with Chrissy in the woods, but the way that scene, he's introduced in that scene, it's like horror film. There's Eddie, and at first he's not super, like, he's a little intimidating to her, and then he kind of changes on a dime, and he's like, no, I'm actually really cool. And you're like, oh, he is cool. And then later on, he actually has the cult of Vecna, and as people going into the season, you're like, oh, we know Vecna is the name of the villain. Is he somehow involved with this? And then up to the point of the end of the episode where they're like, oh, more creepy shit with Chrissy's happening, and he's there with her. Up until that very last part, I was like, ooh, is this where they're gonna turn and be like, he's in on it, or he's
the bad guy? I did not get that vibe at all.
Like, I thought they were gonna be like, hey, you remember how Billy was being used by the Mind Flayer? This kid's also being used by the villain, but he's just way cooler about it than Billy, who's just all aggro all the time.
Yeah.
This is just a more like, you know, unconventional. He's the snake oil salesman who like lures you in with his charms. It's like, aha, monsters. But I don't think that's the case now. But
well, it's definitely not.
I loved how they kind of like toyed with it just enough. We were kind of like, I like this guy, but I'm not too sure.
That's very interesting. I was not picking up on those vibes at all. I did get the like Evil Dead one, maybe two vibes when she was in the forest. And we saw we see this like little clock in the tree, and that, I think that clock becomes a motif throughout the entire season from what the Duffers were saying. But yeah, so she goes to buy drugs from Eddie in the woods, and it ends up, you know, by the way, weed was really cheap back then.
Yeah, no,
$20 for a half an ounce. That's incredible. I know that inflation and weed wasn't as good back then, blah, 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 but wow. And she wants something a little stronger, but yeah, so we'll get to that later though. We'll cross off the Chrissy buying drugs. Cut back to Joyce. Joyce calls Murray. Murray Bauman's doing some taekwondo, some karate or something like that, making an ice bath. And Joyce is like, hey, I just got a Russian doll in the mail. And he's like, well, that's clearly a bomb. And he's like, wait, take his clothes off. And she's like, it's got nipples. And then it's always some weird shit with Murray in this show. And you hear him, and he's in the bath is what's really going on. But on her end, all she hears is, oh, yeah.
It's an ice bath.
Yeah, yo, for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, and ultimately he says, you know, you need to break it from really far away. It takes me a long time to figure out what the fuck's going on with it. I was like, why didn't you just hit it with a hammer?
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. Like, why are we doing this whole Rube Goldberg device?
Why are we playing Home Alone with this doll?
Just knock it off the fucking table.
Yeah. Done. It's porcelain. But she sees a little crack in the porcelain. So there might be something in there. Murray assumes it's a bomb since it's from Russia. And we'll get to that later, but she finds a note, says Hop's alive. It's got magazine letters cut out on
it. Could you guys read what the rest of it said? Cause I only saw Hop is alive.
It went by too quick.
We're not the pause the show and break the news to our listeners kind of people. They just watched it. You can pause it on your own, guys. Mm-hmm. Come on. You got to meet us halfway here.
Yeah. Don't be lazy.
It's Jeeves already.
It's 5:30 in the morning here. We cut back to a little scene that's intercut between Nancy and, I guess her boss, coworker, editor. I'm confused because she's 12.
What did you call him? McDorcas?
Well, yeah, Dorky McDorcas. She is at Emerson College, right? So why is she doing the Hawkins High School newspaper with these?
She's a senior. in high school, and she's already been accepted to that college.
Oh.
And Jonathan is waiting to get his acceptance letter to that college.
Because he graduated already.
Yes.
My mind is blown.
He has not graduated yet. He's also a senior. But
he's like senior in shop, right?
He's a senior in that other California school.
Okay. So we get a little scene where basically Argyle's... Each of the opposite sex is telling either Jonathan or Nancy that their relationship is not as good as they think it is, right?
And they're both like, why aren't you guys visiting for spring break, right?
Why aren't you visiting one another? It's a little shady, you know. And Argyle calls Jonathan Mopey Dick. That was really awesome. Funny. That guy's hilarious. And they both stick up for one another passionately. That's why I love them, right? And there's not even that. I didn't get like a note or a hint of doubt in their speeches like you would normally get in a setup like this. No, she's great. Like there was none of that. It was like this passionate, you're wrong. So that was kind of refreshing.
Let's just nip this in the butt.
I'm sure it'll still like create some dramatic tension later in their relationship. But as for right now, it seems like no, they're actually just really confident in it, right? And then
Argyle's hair, I just want to say, his hair is so long. And it's so fine.
So beautiful.
At some point, I kept thinking like, man, he's got a really large towel wrapped on his head. It's just kind of draped. But I'm like, oh, no, that's his hair. It was weird because it almost like didn't separate. You know how hair kind of separates toward the end?
It was just fine and straight. Yeah.
It's there.
It's a very large towel.
That hair is there.
And we cut to Mike and Dustin hunting for someone to replace Lucas on the squad of the D&D, a substitute for the Hellfire Club.
On the championship basketball game.
Yep, he's not going to be able to make it.
He's a bench warmer.
But he's got to be there to be cool, man.
You all got to play your part.
We already talked about the drug deal that comes up next. And then we cut back to L. She's getting an F on a test. I assume that's English. Come on, we all know that was coming. But she ain't no snitch. Because right after that is the fight we were talking about earlier. Angela comes out, knocks out her diorama, steps on it, makes fun of her. And teacher comes up and she says, I tripped because she ain't no snitch. But she does try to use her powers on Angela to no avail and looks really goofy because she's just pointing at her and screaming.
And then the girl, I always think.
And Will's just watching like, shit, she did the hand thing.
She did the hand.
That's going to take her months to get over that.
We're going
to
move again.
Then we cut back to the championship game and there to sing the national anthem is Tammy Thompson.
Fuck yes. Let's
go. That was an awesome
deep cut reference from season three.
You can tell that was for the fans because all three of us watching the show together, when they said Tammy Thompson, we all went, oh, Tammy Thompson! She's such a dud!
She's such a dud! We're going to hear her sing like an angel.
And you know what? She didn't disappoint. She sounded like an angel that fell from heaven and hit every tree branch on the way down.
And she did indeed.
And then her, Robin and Steve are mouthing to each other, she sounds like a Muppet.
And then we had that little conversation between Robin and Vicky is the girl that she's crushing on.
Yeah. She was trying to talk to her a little bit.
Did you ask me a question? She's like, no.
Yeah, that was adorable.
Leave me alone.
That was adorable. And like, during the Tammy Thompson singing. Yeah. So it was like this perfect callback because she used to have a crush on Tammy Thompson, as we all know. And then there's this great sequence intercut between the Dungeons and Dragons game and the basketball game because Erica, Lucas's sister, is replacing him on the team. She's Lady Applejack.
Applejack, yeah.
And she's a level 14 rogue. Right. So she joins the team.
I love the touch of Erica coming in. We're draped in the American flag.
You can't spell America without Erica.
All set to Tammy Thompson singing the national anthem. Like, mwah.
Chef's kiss. It was a great moment for sure. And so we get that intercut sequence of the two games. They both end in victory based on the Sinclair's efforts. They win the D&D game. And then, you know, Lucas has the winning shot in the basketball game. And there's this really great moment where they all leave their separate areas at the same time, one in the gymnasium, one in the little Dungeons and Dragons dungeon, I guess. And Lucas kind of looks over in sadness, like, oh, I'm kind of missing out over there, even as elated as he is to have achieved his goal of being like the popular basketball guy.
I think he was more sad that his friends didn't come and
see that. Oh, and see that. Yeah. Sure.
Because I know the Duffers mentioned in interviews that this season is going to touch a lot on how, like, sometimes friend groups will go into high school, and just because of the different activities you guys kind of take part in, you grow apart from your childhood friends. And not necessarily because you guys are don't like each other anymore. It's just you take different paths and you start hanging out with different people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. That's the read. That's the read.
You read the shit out of that, Steve.
And then we cut to Max. She's cleaning up the beer cans from her mom and feeding the dogs that they apparently don't let in the trailer. And she's in a trailer park now, apparently right next to Eddie Munson. And then we see Eddie Munson bring Chrissy Cunningham into his trailer. That he's looking for the ketamine. While he's trying to find it, she gets into an extended nightmare sequence where she can't. And we see from Eddie's perspective what that looks like. It's not like I pictured she's running around the trailer, you know, and then would
screaming
come back,
like crazy.
Come back too, right? She's standing stock still, with her eyes bouncing around and rolling back in her head. She's completely trapped in this dream state, being chased by who we assume is Vecna. I'm sorry to any listeners that didn't watch the trailer, but you'd have watched this episode. And so, yeah. And then she gets brutally crazy murdered, levitated onto the ceiling, and her bones crushed and twisted somehow.
That was insane.
And that was the end.
That was awesome. That was so dope.
It was such a
great... Eddie's just standing there screaming, holding the ketamine. He's desperately going to need...
I don't like this. I don't like it.
Yeah. To wake up now.
Yeah.
It was such a great, like, 1980s horror Freddy Krueger scene. Just because from her perspective, she ends up leaving Eddie's trailer and is now in, I assume her home, because she sees her dad, she sees her mom, and then she gets like stuck in the corner, and the Vecna character kind of just slowly lumbers in, and he's all gross and covered in shadow, but you see enough of him and he says something like, your suffering's at an end, and then he just kind of like puts his hand, his fucking giant, it's huge, his hand is huge,
monster hands.
Just puts his giant hand.
He was definitely on the upside down basketball team.
Oh, he palmed her head. Just palmed it.
From Sam.
And then just sort of squeezed his fingers.
Yeah. And just palming her head made her physical body in our world slam up in the ceiling and get, you know, contorted in front of poor Eddie.
Yeah. He's like, I don't know what's going on. This ketamine
snapped her eyes. Eyeballs literally popped out of her head. It was wild.
Mm-hmm. It was wild.
So what do you think is gorier, that or the mind flayer where everyone just kind of melts into meat sludge?
That is because he like one by the four. Melt is almost comical to me. You know, it's like,
wait, what is more gore to you?
The season four. This.
OK, OK.
Because I think the melting and melding into a creature is kind of just silly.
And I'm goo.
Sam Raimi-ish, right? Yeah,
it's I think it's.
If they prolonged it more.
It's grosser, but this is far more like unsettling.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ugh.
Bones can snap. Eyeballs can pop out or pop in. But you can't melt, typically.
Challenge accepted.
With the power to melt. So that brings us to our chocolate pudding segment. All right.
I found the chocolate pudding.
What was that action figure TV show? That was a... deep cut.
Yeah.
That's good.
Melt Man.
Melt Man with the power to melt.
Yeah. Scuba Diver. Stinky Diver.
Stinky Diver. Oh, the Nickelodeon show?
Yeah. And then the naked guy.
Kablam?
Yeah, Kablam.
Kablam, there it is.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. I wonder why you were looking at me all crazy. All right, now it's time to find the chocolate pudding. Your top three favorite moments from the show, starting with number three, Andy.
My number three is going to be the intercut between Dustin and Erica both winning their respective games.
Okay.
I thought that was really effectively done. I thought for sure one of them was going to shit the bed, and neither did. And it was really cool to just the way that they bounce back and forth between it, and see these two groups achieve their goals.
They
at the
really
same time, and they build up this high that immediately becomes this sad low, like right afterward, and just like the emotional roller coaster of the sequence of events was pretty great.
For sure, Steve, your number three.
My number three is a scene between Eddie and Chrissy in the drug deal. Just because there was a lot of tension in the beginning of that scene, and then the way Eddie kind of cuts it and becomes this comical, charismatic self, you're like, man, I like this dude. Mm-hmm. I like him so much.
You know what? I got $20.
I want to see his band. I want to see his band play. what did he say the band was? Something Coffin.
I didn't hear. She's like, how could I forget a name like that? And I was thinking, I didn't hear it.
Yeah. At first, I thought he said Corona Coffin. I'm like, I thought
they said that too.
Interesting choice.
Maybe so. I know they play on Tuesday nights. That's all I know.
In front of five drunks.
Yep. One Chris? Of them is Max's mom.
too soon.
My number three is the very, very end in the trailer. What happens to Chrissy? The horror sequence. I thought it was terrifying. I thought it was ramped up to 11.
And he went there.
Nice. Just makes me so excited for the future. It's the binge model. Most people couldn't help but watch the second episode right then and there, but we got a goddamn job to do. And Andy, what's your number two?
My number two is the Chrissy's bulimia bathroom sequence. Where she's in there puking her balls up. Max is in there like, are you okay? And then we get that distorted mother voice. That was like the first true horror moment for me in this show. And as you guys know, I jam with it. I jam with the horror. And so I love when a horror movie takes a voice and then distorts it and then makes it deeper and weird. I think of like Stir of Echoes, like, don't ask the boy any more questions. Talk to me. You know, shit always gives me chills. And so the mom voice, like, honey, are you okay? I'll gut you like a fucking fish. I was like, let's go. I'm here for it. So, yeah, that was my number two.
Steve, what's your number two?
My number two is the introduction scene to Eddie Munson in the cafeteria. It was such a fun scene. You really get to see what that character's like. You could see Mike and Dustin really in their element in a high school setting, which is interesting. And then even the like other Hellfire Club members, there's the two normal looking dudes. I don't know if they have names yet. And then there's the one guy who looks like a 40-year-old dude that's just in high school still. You know which one I'm talking about? The John Belushi of the group. like, I love all those characters instantly, but especially
the one that's like over my dead body.
Yeah. That dude.
John Belushi.
I immediately loved all those characters, and seeing Dustin and Mike kind of in adapting to high school in their own unique way was really cool. And so, yeah, that's why I like that. And there's going to be a common thread in my top three.
That's a great moment. My second favorite moment was the opening sequence, the scene that we got on YouTube.
That is a good
shot. I just think it's so well shot, and they did such a good job of not only introducing you to a key character mystery and a fan favorite character from the first season. So they're just really trying to ramp it up your interest and your hype, which is why they released it on YouTube. For anybody that was on the fence about whether or not they were even going to watch this for whatever reason, they were like, here, bitch, check us out. but also it let you know what they had in store right away. Like, hey, this is, you know, they even had to put a disclaimer on it. You know, like this is bad. This is going to upset you. And that's where we're going to go this season. And I appreciate that, you know, mm-hmm. take it. Let's start us there and then take me down a little bit and then maybe back up, you know? So anyway, that's why I have those two moments on there. Because I just think it's kind of a cop out to choose those two moments because there's a two obvious climaxes. But at the same time, I had to be honest, like this was crafted well.
Be okay? honest, Papa Bear.
Andy, you're number one.
There's a theme in mind too, Steven. My number one is the ending, the horror sequence with Chrissy trying to escape the what was the trailer that becomes presumably her home, running into her mom who's sewing, who turns around with demon face, her dad with the stitch to face, Vecna slowly, creepily coming down the stairs. He looked badass. He looked awesome. Intercutting that with Eddie, who's freaking out, trying to wake her up. Like, he's playing it off comically, but still scared. And it's really affecting. And then the straight up body horror death sequence that we get for that was it sets the stakes really well of like, holy shit. Like, you know, it's been bad and like those demo dogs are going to get you, but like now it's going to be like, you're going to get snapped like twigs and like it's sweet.
Yeah. Because they do kill you, but it's never seemed like they're going to mm-hmm. like, they have like these tiny little cactus teeth. And when they're biting Bob and it's terrible at the same time, it looks like they're just like scraping his skin. Yeah, this stings. You know what I mean? Ow. They're not taking chunks out
Joyce,
or anything.
Where are you going?
Get him. Ow. Yeah, so I agree with you there. And I love the design of Vecna, but at the same time, I hate his squishy feet so far. He's got like squishy Gumby feet.
Yeah, he's got kind of like a Groot like, going on.
Yeah, or like an Ent. That's what I was thinking. Like, we are the guardians of the trees. Yeah, it's kind of Groot feet, hasty. But they're squishy. Don't be hasty, little hobbits. Yeah, that's. I wish he had, I don't know,
feet.
Just maybe just put some fucking feet on him.
Some kicks.
He's got a face. Some kicks. He's just wearing Jordans. Steve, what's your number one?
My number one is Andy's number three, the intercut Hellfire Club game and basketball game. I really like the way they edited between the two different planes of actions. I really like how they brought Erica back. I think that's a character that, I was a little on the fence with. Like, I didn't hate her or anything by any stretch of the imagination, but I also wasn't sold on her. And just her coming in with the American flag and she's like talking trash and she's embraced her nerddom. I really love that. Obviously, Eddie Munson's there and I'm loving him already. I loved that the Sinclairs won, which these are two characters that I don't think get any real focus. You know, Lucas is usually third or fourth fiddle in the group of boys, and he had a big moment. He won the championship game. That's really cool. And I really love how you take that juxtaposition and it's like, oh, he achieved this great, amazing thing, but none of his friends are there to see it. And that's such a big, I think that is a very seminal moment between these characters' relationships. And I look forward to seeing how that plays out in the episodes to come.
Absolutely. That's my number one as well, sort of. The Erica Hellfire reveal, but specifically Tammy Thompson.
Fuck yeah, Tammy Thompson.
My favorite moment is Tammy Thompson, but not because of the reason you think. Tammy being there was funny.
She's such a dad.
But I love that interplay between Robin and Vicky and even Steve out there supporting her and, you know, making the Tammy jokes with her. Cause she's actually talking to Steve and Vicky overhears her and she goes, oh, now I have a chance to talk to you. You know,
never mind.
I thought that was really, really special. I'm in awe of Maya Hawke and the whole character of Robin. I like it very much. And, but that whole sequence there, like that was definitely the height for me. So that takes us to our egos. What did you guys find? Let's do this. This is all kind of willy nilly. So we just kind of, we throw them out there.
Do we explain what Easter egos are for?
I did at the beginning, but just in case, they're Easter eggs. We call them egos, obviously, because Eleven loves egos. So all the little 80s references, maybe sometimes just a song that we can pick up. It might not even have anything to do with the 80s. It's just something neat that we thought they threw in for us to notice, or any kind of other horror properties that we see threads of. Sometimes we're making it up. Sometimes it's real.
Old dumb shit from the 80s. It's not an Easter egg at all. It's just like one of mine is the old Crayola box for Eleven's modeling clay. It was just the old Crayola logo.
First thing I wrote down was the Walkman.
Oh, I didn't catch Walkman. I mean, I eventually wrote down Walkman, but it took me a minute. Like
as soon as she got off the bus with those headphones, I said, it's got to be a fucking Walkman. Yeah. What would it be? A CD player?
That's fair.
Yeah.
Steve?
I wrote down Paperboy. I feel like that opening sequence.
Don't remember what it means.
No, I don't know what it's from, but I would almost guarantee that there's a
Paperboy.
No. I got some popsicles in my tooth shed.
Did you ever play the video game Paperboy back in the day?
Yes. Hell yeah. Maybe.
Go. I got some money for you in my pocket. I'll reach on in there and fish it out.
I did play the Paperboy Nintendo game. That was awesome. I got one for you, Steve. California Dreamin'.
Who sings that?
Well, originally, Mamas and the Papas. But I don't know who was doing that cover.
I don't either. but yeah, you're right. It was originally Mamas and the Papas, but I don't know what the cover was. Because that was definitely a cover song.
Yes. I love the Mamas and the Papas. And you didn't know. I knew who the Mamas and the Papas were based on our trivia game.
Yeah.
So, ha!
Yeah.
Even though I did think it was Thin Lizzy later and it was Kiss. Whatever.
There was a Marlboro ad on the back of the... I think it was Newsweek. Or I can't remember what
the magazine. Yeah,
the magazine. Newsweek.
Yeah,
and I was that's like the only little bit of smoking that we got in this, which is cool. It's like the Duffers giving a slight middle finger to Netflix, like can't fucking smoke.
Yeah, Joyce anymore. Hasn't smoked yet.
Oh,
yeah.
We did see that Max was like, "Mom, you fell asleep with your cigarette lit again, putting it out."
Nice,
a metaphor. Good catch. We done with this.
Yeah, putting it out, baby.
I have a couple. Obviously, the Hellfire Club, I think, is a reference to the X-Men Hellfire Club. That's a group of villains.
Did not know that. That's cool.
I saw the Reeboks. Reebok shoebox.
The Reebok box.
That the diorama is...
How did she pronounce that?
Diorama or something
Diorama,
crazy.
Something like
diorama.
That.
Did you roll eyes rolling into the back of your
head? Yeah, I was like, we didn't need that. But it was if that's all they do, that's fine. It's like, that's a tough word for her. It's like, yeah, she didn't... Nobody said that to her. Will didn't. Joyce, nobody...
Yeah.
She just read the word. Where'd she read it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe she should pick up one of Joyce's encyclopedias.
Yeah, that's fair.
Mike had some Pop-Tarts. In the very beginning, you threw them in the toaster oven.
We still have Pop-Tarts, guys.
Well, we still have Reebok, too, but...
Yeah, okay, but when's the last fucking time you saw on TV a character putting them in the toaster?
Yeah, who toasts a Pop-Tart?
The Pop-Tarts were like brand fucking new. That was new technology in the 80s,
man. That's true. Yeah, it's true.
They were like, you want that strawberry bullshit? No, you want brown sugar.
Yeah, I did like the brown sugar and cinnamon, but I actually like strawberry ones too. I even like uniced ones and just put a little butter on them. Don't worry about it.
I found
butter. Don't worry about it.
I found Eggo flavored ones
butter.
Last month. Sorry. They're pretty good.
Don't be weird, Steve.
Do you guys have any more? I have some.
Yeah,
I do.
Keep going.
I'm waiting to see if you guys don't get any of mine.
On the phone booth that somebody used, there was graffiti that said ET phone home.
Oh, Andy's got the eagle eye.
Catch. Yeah. I didn't catch that one.
It was pretty good. I can't remember who was on the phone booth.
Dustin.
Okay. Yeah.
He was calling Steve.
Yes.
Speaking of Steve, they talk about Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Mm-hmm. They do indeed.
They talk about the boobies. The boobies. Everyone loves boobies.
Yes.
According to Steve.
No, I think he's correct in that.
Max was listening to Running Up the Hill by Kate Bush on her Walkman.
Is that who that was?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I think that was Kate Bush.
Let's see. When the D&D, the Hellfire group, decides to fight Vecna and Dustin rolls, he rolls an 11, which is a miss.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, a little Easter egg.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think. Well, again, the whole Dungeons & Dragons game is the foreshadowing of the whole season, right?
For sure. So 11's going to miss.
That's neat. Or just doesn't have the powers.
Yeah.
Chris, you mentioned this before, but Detroit Rock City plays. It's by Kiss.
Uh-huh.
Dustin has a great Lando, or no, it's not Lando, I'm sorry. It's a Han Solo line. He says, never tell me the odds.
I was sitting there trying to remember where that was from, but
because C-3PO is always like, "Oh, the odds of
yeah, blah, 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 blah. I'm a little bitch bot."
And he'd be like, "Don't never tell me the odds." That's
pretty good impression.
And there was a song, so I don't know what the band is, but the song's called "I Was a Teenage Werewolf," and that's what's playing when they sit down to meet Eddie in the cafeteria.
That's interesting because I wrote down Teen Wolf about the basketball scenes. I'm pretty sure that there's a lot of Teen Wolf, at least in this episode, especially with the Chad guy. He's kind of Michael J. Foxy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wrote it down.
I don't know.
That's in stone. There was also a Weird Owl reference. We've talked about that before. It was real brief, but I think Eddie brought it up to Dustin. Real obvious one, obviously. There's huge Freddy Krueger themes all throughout this. The size of Vecna's hand is supposed to mimic the claws, especially in that shot where he's first coming down the stairs. Mm-hmm. And his voice and the way that he talks in general. You know, I think Andy mentioned Evil Dead, which it very much is. But I think it's even more Freddy Krueger, the way that he... What's up, bitch? You know, that's just how Freddy Krueger was.
Well, Robert Englund is in the show.
And
I don't know if...
I know. I looked really hard in that face and all I could see was Crypt Keeper.
He's listed in IMDb as playing a character named Victor Creel. So I don't know if he's Vecna or not. So,
right.
But he is in this. And I think this whole season is going to be nonstop Freddy Krueger.
Yes. And the whole like
dream sequence
thing is that's Krueger all the
super,
way.
Super, super Krueger.
Yeah. I have a big one.
The way that the girl died at the end, that was straight up Nightmare on Elm Street, where that's one of the best death scenes in the first Nightmare on Elm Street, where the girl gets ripped out of bed and up to the ceiling.
Into the corner.
Torn apart up on the ceiling. It's badass.
Yep.
So that was a big one for me.
So I caught one that I might have made up, but if it's real, I'm super proud of it. I don't think even the great Steve caught it.
I clearly didn't because I already...
You're out?
I'm out.
So I'm pretty sure at the end, oh God, I hope I'm not wrong. This would be so embarrassing. At the end,
Jefferson Starship.
At the end of Tammy Thompson's national anthem, it becomes Jimi Hendrix's guitar solo cover of the national anthem.
Oh.
Cut to Erica draped in the American flag as Jimi Hendrix was draped in the flag at the end of that solo.
I forgot about him.
Boom.
Dude, you're absolutely right. Way to fucking go.
I got one that even tops that, though.
Oh, shit.
Oh, goddamn.
I'm coming at you.
You ready? Don't come at me, bro.
Winona Ryder was sent a Russian doll, which is a Netflix property.
Get the fuck out, Andy.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Natasha Lyonne, Easter egg guys. Come on. Yeah,
baby. All right, Steve. The most important thing, the thing they've all been waiting for. Please read the Mad Lib that we accidentally created at the beginning of this episode.
Allow me to read you Where's Will? Mike, Steve, and Lucas didn't find it too crispy when Will wasn't in school that morning, but they couldn't believe that their zebra was missing that day.
Ooh.
The unusual grail of radios, the Carmichael Ham Shack, had finally arrived. But before they could really test flip it, the principal and two cans came bearing bad news. Oh, don't you hate it when cans?
The principal had two cans.
I got bad news. These cans will help you.
This is bad.
Everyone loves boobies. Will was quintessential. He never made it home after their Dungeons and Peacocks.
This is like 11 game. Wrote this.
Their Dungeons and Peacocks game last night. The boys were instructed to cook.
A little DMP.
Oh, no. The boys were instructed to cook straight home after school and stay out of it. But Mike couldn't stop worrying about his lingerie. How could they sit at Saudi Arabia and do nothing? Then it hit him. When Will was faced with a Demogorgon in their campaign last night, he could have cast a tower to protect only himself and play it safe. Instead, he cast a cellar ball and risked it all to protect his friends. In that moment, Mike knew that Will needed him to run to it all, too. He grabbed his walkie flibbity gibbets and signaled Lucas they were going to seduce their friend. And that concludes Where's Will?
Wow. Wow. Owen Wilson dropped by and listened to the whole Mad Lib.
They're going
to
seduce their friend.
Wow. That's all the time we have for the Hellfire Club. Tune in immediately if you want to. I don't know what your life's like, but we're going to be recapping episode 2 right after this, and then 3, probably 4, I would guess 5, and then 6 and 7. Then we got to wait a month for the finale. But thank you for tuning in. For new listeners, welcome and hello. For old listeners, you're getting old. Tune in soon. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming. Dr. B, welcome back. Please help us thank our patrons.
Oh, hello. I didn't see you there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, I was just drawing a dog.
I thought that was a cow.
Well, security, have this man escorted out. I have patrons to thank. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Carmelita. Thank you, Carrie. Oh, thank you, Enza. Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Jimmy. Sarah, thank you so much. Thank you, Elo. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Shay. Thank you, Stephen Five. Thank you, A. Wells. And in all that time I read these names, I've been doing a crossword puzzle.
It's finished.
It's finished. You know what the word three down is?
What is it? R.I.P. Daniel? Ted. Oh, Ted. Okay.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.